Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian and Congregation of Mount Zion, the 12th Hour in the Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is May 24, 2014, or it is Zip 26, 2018. We will start our third service on this Sabbath day with a song entitled, "'Tis So Sweet to Trust in the Yahshua." "'Tis so sweet to trust in Yahshua, just to take Him at His word, just to rest upon His promise, just to know the Savior Yah. Yahshua, Yahshua, how I trust Him, how I prove Him o'er and o'er. Yahshua, Yahshua, precious Yahshua, oh, for grace to trust Him more. Oh, how sweet to trust in Yahshua, just to trust His cleansing blood, just in simple faith to plunge me neath the healing cleansing flood. Yahshua, Yahshua, how I trust Him, how I prove Him o'er and o'er. Yahshua, Yahshua, precious Yahshua, oh, for grace to trust Him more. Yes, 'tis sweet to trust in Yahshua, just from sin and self-deceit, just from Yahshua simply taking life and rest and joy and peace. Yahshua, Yahshua, how I trust Him, how I prove Him o'er and o'er. Yahshua, Yahshua, precious Yahshua, oh, for grace to trust Him more. I'm so glad I learned to trust Thee, precious Yahshua, Savior, friend. And I know that Thou art with me, will be with me to the end. Yahshua, Yahshua, how I trust Him, how I proved Him o'er and o'er. Yahshua, Yahshua, precious Yahshua, oh, for grace to trust Him more.
Part 4, 144,000, Shepherd Rod, Volume 1. We're on page 59. As usual, we're going to do a little review from our last study. As Esau awoke to see the folly of his rash exchange when it was too late to recover his loss, so it will be in the day of the Elohim with those who have bartered their heirship to heaven for the selfish gratification. This is Patriarchs and Prophets, page 182. We must make our choice while we are given the freedom to select either the pottage or the birthright. Edom A type. For the transaction was made, and he sold his birthright unto Jacob. Just then his name was changed, therefore was his name called Edom. Thus Esau despised his birthright. The name Edom means red or scarlet, the symbol of sin. Esau was born red, but was not called by that name Edom at first. For the class which Esau represents are in danger of losing out because of the lustful appetite, disregard of the health reform. Thus they are called Edom. Now I'd like to point out, as soon as Jacob got the birthright confirmed to him, on the night that he wrestled with the angel all night on his return back to his father's house, and where he was, Esau was coming to meet him to prevent him from coming back to his father's house. And on that night, Jacob wrestled with the angel and got the victory. And the angel blessed him and changed his name from Jacob to Israel. And at that same time, Esau got his name changed from Esau to Edom. Okay. This is the class of whom the prophet Isaiah has reference to in Isaiah 63:1. Both Esau and Jacob represents two sinful classes. Esau by the color of his skin, and Jacob by his name. The names of both were changed. Jacob because he coveted something worthwhile. Esau because of the lust. Jacob's name meant deceiver. The same, the name Esau in the Hebrew, Heri, which symbolically would be honored as previously explained, means he that finishes. Note the remarkable meaning of the name is signifying the class given the privilege to finish the work. In Revelation 3:14-16, we read, "And unto the angel of the church of the Laodiceans write, I know thy works, that thou art neither cold nor hot. I would that thou wert cold or hot. So then, because thou art lukewarm and neither cold nor hot, I will spew thee out of my mouth." Volume 5, page 82. The call to this great and solemn work was presented to men of the learning and position. Had these been little in their own eyes and trusted fully in Yahweh, he would have honored them with bearing his standard in the triumph unto the victory. But they separated from Elohim, yielded unto the influence of the world, and the Yahweh rejected them. Okay, Los and Yang, Jacob, the younger twin, or the one who came last by the holding on to Esau's heel, represents the class which came into the third angel's message by the leadership of the class represented by the Esau. Okay, so now, Gilead Center, 1970 is when I came into their midst, and this is when I joined their church, Mount Gilead, their Isaac branch, the Branch Davidian Adventist. That's where I joined them, and that's where the beginning of Esau's reign began, their tournament, 1970. Okay, now, and so what was I brought into? I was brought into the third angel's message by antithetical Esau. Now, what does that mean? According to V.T. Hotfair. But I was born in the third angel's message 32 years earlier. Okay, so now, apparently, that's all Esau had was the third angel's message. Even though he was teaching the fourth and fifth angel, and that he had the fifth angel, and no doubt he did have, because Jones and Wagner in 1888 had the fifth angel's message, righteousness by faith. And so I'm just saying that angel was introduced early on to the Adventists, way back there in 1888. V.T. Hotif had it renewed unto him, and then Verlis Johnson had it renewed unto him. The teaching of it, but not the fulfillment of it. So, until the fifth angel comes and lightens the whole earth with his glory in the 12th hour and swells the third angel into the loud cry, then all you have is the three angels' messages. That's all you have. So that's all Gilead Center had, was three angels' messages. That's all the Adventists ever had from 1844 clear to 2002. Okay. Though he was destitute of the qualification, talking about Esau, or I'm talking about Jacob. Jacob had an earnest desire and great zeal for the position which his brother occupied. Though he was destitute of the qualifications which Esau possessed for performing the duties of this office, which he coveted and bought, yet by his great zeal and determination he made good. For the price he paid was food, worth nothing, but that which he received was of the great value, regardless of how much training or talent one has in a certain occupation. He can never be successful unless he has a great zeal and interest in that particular line. Esau had a great deal to lose, but his loss was Jacob's gain. That which Jacob offered as payment for Esau's valuable possession was of little worth. Therefore, what Esau gained was little more than nothing. It was not long after Jacob secured the blessing from his father, Isaac, that the Esau, filled with remorse, threatened Jacob's life. Both classes represented by the Esau and Jacob may be in trouble. One because of the realization of their loss, the other because of the hatred manifested toward them. Jacob's dream. Jacob, at the advice of his parents, left home and went to Padan-Aram, and on his way, the very first night, Elohim appeared unto him in his dream. And behold, a ladder was set up on the earth, and the top of it reached into heaven. And behold, the angels of the Elohim ascending and descending on it, Genesis 28:12. For the ladder represents Yahshua. Elohim the Father stood above it, Jacob at the foot of it, Genesis 28:13. This dream gave Jacob great courage, and he made a vow unto the Elohim. Jacob is now to become the father of Israel, 12 tribes, through whom many nations shall be blessed. A tie for the Israel by the promise, the 12 tribes, the 144,000. The dream which he had in the night was only a vision and representation of some future event. The meaning of the dream can be only one thing. If the latter represents Yahshua, the angels as messengers, Elohim the Father at the head and Jacob at the foot, it means a complete connection with heaven and the true Israel. The latter rain, the loud cry of the third angel's message, see Revelation 18:1. So who's the true Israel today? The house of David. Mount Zion at the 12th hour. Okay. So it says, but note that Jacob went to Padan-Aram unto the house of Bethuel, his mother's father. There he married Leah and Rachel, the daughters of Laban, Zilpha and Bilhah. The maids of Leah and Rachel also became his wives. These are the mothers whence the 12 tribes came, but they are only the mothers in type of the true tribes, the 144,000. Leah was the only legal wife of Jacob. Rachel was her sister. Zilpha and Bilhah were bondwomen. Let Leah represent the true church of Christ, as it says here, of the Yahshua, Seventh-day Adventist. Rachel, a sister church, but not the true Protestant. Zilpha and Bilhah, the world religious and irreligious. These are the mothers of the 144,000, and the way they, the 144,000, are gathered. But while the 12 tribes came from many mothers, they were begotten by the same Father. So with the true, the 144,000. While they are gathered from all the churches and the world, they must be brought into the one church at the same period of the church history by the same message. That's the third angel's message. Jacob homeward bound, time of trouble. At the end of 20 years, Jacob was homeward bound to the promised land and his father's house with a great possession. By the time he arrived at his father's house, he had his 12 sons, the heads of the 12 tribes. Before Jacob entered his father's house, he went through that terrible struggle and wrestled with the angel till the breaking of the day, Genesis 32:24-29. Jacob wrestling with the angel typifies the time of the Jacob struggle. For the church, we read in early writings, page 36 and 37, a decree went forth to slay the saints, which caused them to cry day and night for the deliverance. This was the time of Jacob's trouble. Okay, that's a type of the promised land, Israel, and his father's house. For if the promised land of the Canaan is as a type of the promised heavenly Canaan, then Jacob's father's house is a type of our father's house, just so when Israel, the true, enters our father's house in the heavenly Canaan, there will be the 12 tribes, the 144,000. The question arises, are these all that will be saved in the third angel's message? Remember that when Jacob entered his father's house with his 12 sons, he had many servants, male and female, that outnumbered his tribe's sons of many times. Just so with Israel, the true, who will have with them a great multitude, of which no man can number. Revelation 7:9. The great multitude came by the effort of the tribes after the fulfillment of Ezekiel 9. This study cannot fit another case nor any other church in all the history on the earth. Seventh-day Adventists are the only people and church that has ever been called Israel who have the truth of the healthy form, and that would be in the danger of selling their birthright for a bowl of pottage. By this fact alone, while there are many others, we may know that the Seventh-day Adventist church is Yahweh's true church. All right, let's go into our section 4, who is Israel by the promise. Okay, now we found out who the true Israel today is. It's the mountain of the house of Yahweh, which of the Yahweh, which is established in the top of the mountains, and that's Isaiah 2 and Micah 4, where you find those two references. For this experience, who is Israel by the promise? It says, that's the question mark. For this experience of the Israelites and the departing from the Egypt was written for the instruction of those who should live in the last days, before the overflowing scourge shall come upon the dwellers of the earth. The Yahweh calls upon all who are Israelites indeed to prepare for that event. Volume 6, page 195. For the 12 tribes of the Israel after the flesh are but a type of Israel by the promise, 144,000. As they were Gentiles among Israel the type, there would be Gentiles in Israel the true. For the early part of the Christian church, apostolic time, could not be called Israel, for the history of the church then was typified by Isaac, according to Galatians 4:22-31, and as explained on pages 53 and 54, Isaac was not called Israel, for he was the father of Jacob, and it was Jacob who was called Israel. Therefore, Israel, whatever part of the church it is, must come sometime later in the history of the church. Jacob was the father of the 12 tribes of Israel. And if Isaac after flesh is the type of Israel by the promise, the truth, then let us stay the beginning of Israel after the flesh, if we are to locate or to know of Israel by the promise, 144,000. Okay, so folks, in 1970, when the Isaac Branch movement was born with Rhodes Johnson in the third feeding pasture, Mount Gilead, who was the father and the antitype? It was Isaac, and his name was not called Israel. Okay, so we had the operation of the house of Esau in charge of the kingdom at the Gilead Center, Kermit, Texas, and his antitypical father was Isaac, and he was not called Israel. So Verlus and Gilead Center could not be called the Israel of today either. Sister White said that the Adventist Church is the spiritual Israel of today. Notice she said spiritual Israel. Those of the spiritual Israel to today turns out to be the house of David. That brings forth 144,000. That's the only time that they become spiritual Israel and re-inherit that name, Israel. It's when they get to the 12th hour and they come forth as purified organization, then they get the name Israel re-established to them. Okay, so the journey of Israel down into Egypt could not have been an accident, whatever the reason for it, Elohim was in it. Joseph said unto his brother, Genesis 45:5, he says, "Now therefore, be not grieved nor angry with yourself that ye sold me hither, for Elohim did send me before you to preserve life." Joseph declares that Elohim was the cause for him going into Egypt. Elohim had also told Abraham that he and his seed would sojourn and be afflicted in a strange land a 430 years. So why did Elohim send them into Egypt? Why was Joseph sold at the age of 17? Merely a lad into the hands of the cruel Ishmaelites and led to a strange land to be resold as a slave. We certainly would not make the mistake about thinking that Joseph became faint-hearted on the way. There surely must have been a reason for all of this ill treatment. In Egypt, Joseph was sold to serve as a slave and later was thrown into the dungeon for a number of years. Why did Elohim lead Israel into that savage, strange land where idolatry prevailed everywhere? Elohim certainly knew that in that land they would become slaves in just a short while. Why would heaven allow Elohim's chosen people to become servants to a nation whose idols were their gods? Why did Elohim permit the lashes of the Egyptian taskmasters to be applied upon the backs of his people? Why would divine love permit the children of Abraham, Elohim's friend, while yet in the infancy, to be drowned in the river Nile? Who can say our great Elohim was ignorant of all these things which took place on, or that he made a mistake? The only answer that can be offered is that it was all heavenly design. But what was it all about? Elohim must have had some special reason and specific purpose for an object lesson to be taught at a certain time. One may say Elohim did it all to show his power, but would the all-wise and great Elohim, full of the love and mercy, destroy his children to show his power? Not even an earthly, mortal, human father would dare destroy his children to show his power. Who would dare say human beings have greater love or better judgment than the great Elohim, whose mercy is immeasurable, whose love fills the universe, whose wisdom is unsearchable, whose judgment is justice? Not only has chosen suffered of bondage and cruelty, but the Egyptian as well. At the time of the Exodus movement, at the departure of Israel, the plagues came upon all Egypt and the nation was nearly ruined. On the night of the Passover, there was death in every dwelling where there was no blood on the doorpost, and in every stall of the beast. And all the firstborn in the land of Egypt shall die, from the firstborn of Pharaoh that sitteth upon the throne, even unto the firstborn of the maidservants that is behind the mill, and all the firstborn of the beast. Exodus 11:5. Israel journeyed to the Red Sea, and Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and the waters were divided. Israel went into the sea and walked across over dry ground. The Egyptians pursued after them to the midst of the sea, and Moses stretched his hand over the sea. The waters returned and covered the chariots, horsemen, and all the host of Pharaoh, which came into the sea after them. There remained not so much as one of them. Israel came into the wilderness, where they wandered about for 40 years. Thousands of them perished because of the unbelief. At the end of the wilderness journey, the people crossed the Jordan. During the time Israel was away from the Canaan, the land was thickly inhabited by the heathen nations. Israel was compelled to destroy them by the sword in order to possess the land. Think of the loss of life, grief, and suffering, all because Elohim took Israel into Egypt and brought them back again. Elohim certainly would not destroy his subject just to show his power. In 1 Corinthians 10:11-12, speaking of the experience of the children of Israel, we read, "Now all these things happened unto them for the ensamples, and they are written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the world are come. Wherefore let him that thinketh he standeth take heed lest he fall. If we are the people upon whom the end of the world is about to come, then their ensamples are written for our admonition. This is the reason why Elohim led the children of Israel into Egypt and back again. Think how great the prize to work out the picture, for the lessons to be derived from these great examples are far greater than we have ever realized. Many thousands lost their lives to produce the picture, with the intention that many more thousands could be saved from those who perish. Let us therefore carefully study into the lessons that were intended for our learning and admonition. Pharaoh dreamed, and behold, he stood by the river. And behold, there came up out of the river seven well-favored kine in fat flesh. And they fed in the meadow, and behold, seven other kine came up after them out of the river, ill-favored and lean-fleshed, and stood by the other kine upon the brink of the river, and the ill-favored and the lean kine, or the lean-fleshed kine, did eat up the seven well-favored and fat kine. So the Pharaoh awoke, and it came to pass in the morning that his spirit was troubled. And he sent and called for all the magicians of Egypt, and all the wise men thereof, and the Pharaoh told them his dream, that there was none that could interpret them unto the Pharaoh. Then the Pharaoh sent and called Joseph, and they brought him hastily out of the dungeon. And Pharaoh said unto the Joseph, I have dreamed a dream, and there is none that can interpret it, and I have heard say of thee, that thou canst understand a dream to interpret it. And Pharaoh told the dream unto Joseph. And Joseph said unto Pharaoh, Elohim has showed Pharaoh what he is about to do. The seven good kine are 7 years, and the seven thin and ill-favored kine that came up after them are 7 years. Behold, there come 7 years of great plenty. Okay. Throughout all the land of Egypt, and there shall arise after them 7 years of the 7 years of the famine, and all the plenty shall be forgotten in the land of Egypt, and the plenty shall not be known in the land by the reason of that famine falling, for it shall be very grievous. And in the seven plenteous years the earth brought forth by the handfuls, and he gathered up all the food of the 7 years which were in the land of Egypt, and laid up the food in the cities. The food of the field which was round about every city laid he up in the same. And Joseph gathered corn as the sand of the sea, very much, until he left numbering, for it was without the number. Genesis 41:1-49. We shall endeavor to bring enough evidence in this study to show that Israel's experience in Egypt is a photograph of Israel the True, the 144,000, in the Seventh-day Adventist Church. While the Exodus movement was a great movement, the Second Advent movement will be still greater. Okay. So, the Second Advent movement then truly begins with the true Israel in the 12th hour. Okay. Adventists only had three steps of the genuine movement, and as a real movement. Okay. Elohim will take out a people not from one nation only, but from every nation under heaven, and he will lead them into the heavenly Canaan. For this Advent movement, which the Exodus movement was a type, we believe, was foretold in the prophecy in the following stirring language: it shall come to pass in that day that the Yahweh shall set his hand again the second time to recover the remnant of his people which shall be left. It shall be a highway for the remnant of his people, like as it was to Israel in the day that he camped out of the land of Egypt. Review in Hell, October the 10th, 1929, pages 4 and 5. For the Great Exodus Movement is in a way a type or photograph of the closing work, which comes in the 12th hour that we're in now, of the Elohim under the Advent Movement. No, it's not under the Advent Movement. It is at the end of the three angels' messages and the third step of the genuine movement of Seventh-day Adventists. Okay, for this great Exodus movement materializes in the 12th hour with the house of David, and that starts with the great gathering of the 144,000 out of the Adventist church. Okay, so they do produce the great movement, but they only produce it. They don't they don't act it out in the antitype. Each movement rises in the fulfillment of the time prophecy. Certainties of the Advent Movement by W.A. Spicer, for the fact that Israel after flesh is a type or a photograph, for their experience must be duplicated by the true, otherwise there can be no type. Year of plenty and famine. Elohim permitted the plenty as well as the famine. Each one bears the number 7, meaning perfect or complete. These two sections of the time can only mean one thing, which is none other than this world and the history. In the two great divisions, namely B.C. and A.D., with the cross as a dividing line, the 7 years of plenty represents the Old Testament period in which time Elohim gave plenty, for by his holy prophets he stored it in the great storehouse. What we today call the Bible, in Matthew 11:13 we read, for all the prophets and the law prophesied unto John. It is for this reason that Yeshua made the above statement, for we have no other thus far. In the 7 years of the plenty B.C., Elohim stored his word in the Bible to feed the world, Egypt. In the next 7 years of famine A.D., Elohim, who at sundry times and in divers manners spake in times past unto the fathers by the prophets, hath in these last days spoken unto us by his Son, whom he hath appointed heir of all things, by whom also he made the world, Hebrews 1:1-2. For the New Testament is the fulfillment of the Old. Joseph, type of the Yahshua. Joseph typified Yahshua, see Patriarchs and Prophets, page 239 and 240. Our Elohim in the Old Testament time, 7 years of the plenty, spoke unto his people in divers manners by his prophets, and commanded these things to be written, with the intention to speak unto his people in these last days, through the New Testament, and in the New Testament time, or with the 7 years of the famine, or for the 7 years of famine, unto each one of us individually by the voice of his word as found stored in the Scriptures. Thou shalt be over my house, and according unto thy word shall all my people be ruled. Only in the throne will I be greater than thou. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, see, I have set thee over all the land of Egypt. And Pharaoh took off his ring from his hand and put it upon Joseph's hand, and arrayed him in the vestures of the fine linen, and put a gold chain about his neck, and he made him to ride in the second chariot which he had. And they cried before him, bowed the knee, and he made him ruler over all the land of Egypt. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, I am Pharaoh, and without thee shall no man lift up his hand or foot in all the land of Egypt. Genesis 41:40-44. No greater favor or honor could Pharaoh have shown unto Joseph, and all the Egyptians bowed down unto him. As we proceed in this study, we shall prove beyond a doubt that Joseph is a perfect type of the Yeshua. Alright, Pharaoh type of... if the Joseph typified Yeshua and Pharaoh favored Joseph above any man ever honored, by any king, and Joseph and Pharaoh worked hand in hand, then Pharaoh must stand for some figure or type. It would not be hard to determine what Pharaoh represents. That which honors Yahshua above everything that can be honored upon the earth is what Pharaoh represents. The Church of the Apostles honors Yahshua above everything that can be honored, so much so that all sanctified their lives, or sacrificed their lives. No greater homage has Yahshua received upon the earth by any other part in the history of his Church. By this we understand that Pharaoh represents the Apostles, Church, or organization. For the application made here will prove correct as we advance in this study. Further explanation up on this upon this subject is given on the last page of this section. Okay, it says the beginning of the famine. For the dividing line between the 7 years of plenty and 7 years of famine is the cross. For all the prophets and the law prophesied until John. Matthew 11:13. Where the 7 years of plenty end, the 7 years of famine began. The first year of the famine is the beginning of the Church of Yahshua at the time of the apostles. One may ask, why a famine in the beginning of the apostolic church? Did they not get sufficient corn? Truth, yes, but they got it from the great storehouse of the Bible, in the same way as the Egyptians received their corn in the years of famine from the immense storehouse at the hand of Joseph. See pages 15 to 18. Egyptians are type of the Gentiles. For the 7 years of famine began when the Egyptians came to Pharaoh for the bread. And Pharaoh told all the Egyptians, go unto Joseph. What he says, then you do. And Joseph opened all the storehouses and sold unto the Egyptians. Genesis 41:55-56. And Joseph gathered up all the money that was found in the land of Egypt and in the land of Canaan, for the corn of which they bought. And Joseph brought the money into Pharaoh's house. And when the money failed in the land of Egypt and in the land of Canaan, all the Egyptians came unto Joseph and said, give us bread, for why should we die in thy presence? For the money failed. And they brought their cattle unto Joseph. And Joseph gave them bread in exchange for horses, and for the flocks, and for the cattle of the herds, and for the asses. And he fed them with the bread for all their cattle for that year. When that year was ended, there came unto him the second year, and said unto him, we will not hide it from my master how that our money is spent. My master also hath our herds of the cattle. There is not aught left in the sight of my master but our bodies and our lands. Wherefore shall we die before thine eyes, both we and our land? Buy us in our land for bread, and we in our land will be servants unto Pharaoh. And Joseph bought all the land of Egypt for Pharaoh. For the Egyptians sold every man his field, and they said, thou hast saved our lives. Let us find grace in the sight of my master, and we will be Pharaoh's servants. Genesis 47:14-25. In the beginning of the famine, the Egyptians went to Pharaoh for corn instead of unto Joseph. They were well acquainted with Joseph, for he had been a governor of Egypt for 8 years or more. Joseph rode over all the land of Egypt, and every Egyptian bowed down unto him. During the years of plenty, it was Joseph who bought the corn from the Egyptians, and it seemed strange that they should go to Pharaoh. It must have been by the divine providence that they came unto him. It has been explained that Pharaoh represented the church organization or leadership, for the Egyptians cannot represent anything else but the Gentiles in the days of the apostles. For the Gentiles came to the church Pharaoh, where they were told to go to Joseph, that's parentheses Yahshua. What he saith unto you, this is the church in her purity. without one strange thing in their midst, directed the Gentiles to Yahshua as their life giver, as the Pharaoh directed the Egyptians unto Joseph. The Egyptians sold themselves unto Pharaoh. Okay, Egyptians sold themselves unto Pharaoh, and Joseph bought all the land of Egypt for Pharaoh, for the Egyptians sold every man his field, because the famine prevailed over them. So the land became Pharaoh's, Genesis 47:20. In the preceding verses of the chapter, we read the Egyptians, that the Egyptians spent all their money for the corn. And when the money was gone, they gave the cattle in exchange. And when the cattle were gone, they gave the land. And when the land was gone, they sold themselves and became servants unto Pharaoh. This is a type, but of the fulfillment of this type, we read in the following text. And the multitude of them that believed were of one heart and of one soul. Neither soul say any of them that aught of the things which he possessed was his own, but they had all things common, and with great power gave the apostles witness of the resurrection of the Yahshua Messiah. And great grace was upon them all. Neither was there any among them that lacked, for as many as were possessors of land or houses sold them, and brought the prices of the things that were sold, and laid them down at the apostles' feet. And Joseph, who by the apostles was surnamed Barnabas, a Levite, having land, sold it, and brought the money, and laid it at the apostles' feet. Acts 4:32-37. Thus Jew and Gentile sold all houses and lands, and brought the prices, and laid them at the apostles' feet, and became servant unto the church Pharaoh. So, there is your types also for the kingdom in these last days. All of the saved of the second fruits, all of the Gentiles that are brethren unto the 144,000, are going to come and are going to bring all their possessions. Because there's going to be a famine in the world for the word. And the word is going to be stored up in the storehouse in the house of David. And that's where they're going to all come to. They're going to come to buy this corn again. And the Anatot from all over the world. And what happened? Joseph ended up buying all of their land. He bought all of their cattle. All of their possessions. They even sold their bodies as servants. That's the same thing these last days. The whole world. All these kingdoms and nations. That's the reason why it says antipical Elijah rules over all the nations. He's given the rule over all the nations. Yahshua is sitting upon the throne of David with his power and his underservant Elijah, David. Call him Elijah. That's Malachi 4:5, antipical Elijah. Most people like to think of him as being Yahweh's number one servant that he brought with him from heaven. That's going to rule upon this throne visibly. Going to rule over all nations. And so it's because he has bought everything from all the Gentiles, from all the nations. Says kings are going to come, of the Gentile nations are going to come, and they're going to bring their gold and silver, and they're going to lay it at the kingdom's feet. Okay. Let us go on. Let us continue reading. We're on page 72. Again, we read Acts 5:1-10. But a certain man named Ananias, with a Sapphira, his wife, sold a possession and kept that part of the price. His wife also being privy unto it, and brought a certain part, and laid it at the apostles' feet. But Peter said, Ananias, why hath Satan filled thine heart to lie unto the Holy Spirit, and to keep back part of the price of the land? And Ananias, hearing these words, fell down and gave up the ghost. Thus any who pretended to sell and hold back part of the price received in the days of the apostles died, just as those who would not sell all to Pharaoh in Egypt. But Yahshua said, sell all and follow me. Therefore, type meant antitype. Okay, so that's our type for what's going to happen these last days. Joseph removes people throughout Egypt. And Joseph bought all the land of Egypt for Pharaoh. And as for the people, he removed them to the cities from one end of the borders of Egypt, even unto the other end thereof. Genesis 47, part of verses 20 and 21. This is the type. Following is a fulfillment of the type. Acts 8, 1. And Saul was consenting unto his Stephen's death, and at that time there was a great persecution against the church, which was at Jerusalem. And they were all scattered abroad throughout the regions of the Judea and Samaria, except the apostles. It will be noticed that the apostles were at home, Jerusalem, and there is no record where the apostles sold their land. Now we quote the type of the letter, Genesis 47:22. Only in the land of the priests bought he not, for the priests had a portion assigned them of the Pharaoh, and did eat their portion, which the Pharaoh gave them. Wherefore, they sold not their lands. It is remarkable to note how this coincides to the smallest detail. 70 souls type of the organization. Israel arrived in Egypt in the second year of the famine, Genesis 45:10-11. And thou shalt dwell in the land of Goshen, and thou shalt be near unto me, thou and thy children, and thy children's children, and thy flocks, and thy herd, and all that thou hast, and there will I nourish thee. For yet there are 5 years of famine, lest thou and thy household and all that thou hast come to poverty. The arrival of Israel in Egypt stands for some symbol in which there must be a lesson. Note that this lesson cannot be for the early part of the apostolic church, for Israel came into the second year of the famine. Okay, that was Jacob. That was when Jacob had his name changed to Israel. Okay, for the lesson then intended here is for a latter part, a period in the history of the church. If we are to know the truth of the incident and the lesson intended to be derived from it, reference must here be made to the number of the souls which entered into Egypt, and the sons of Joseph which were born him in Egypt were 2 souls. All the souls of the house of Jacob which came into Egypt were 70, Genesis 46:27. But the Bible says all the souls who came into Egypt were 70 in number. If we can in some way find the meaning of the number, then we shall understand the lesson. When Moses with the children of Israel came to Sinai, he organized the church there, and in organizing, selected 70 elders. This same organization years later crossed the Jordan and went into the Promised Land. There they had the Sanhedrin, which was composed of 70 men. Thus, the number 70 is a symbol of the church organization. The meaning, then, is that there will be a church organization sometime in the history of the A.D. If this is true, then that church, which Yahshua, with the apostles organized, must disband and of necessity be reorganized. This is true, for the apostolic church was disorganized in the Dark Ages, during the time of the beginning of the papal rule. When again organized, it would partially fulfill Joel 2:32 and end the remnant whom the Yahweh shall call. For the 2300 days or years of the Daniel's prophecy in the 8th chapter gives us the entire truth of the church history to 1844. Until which a time there was no call for the reorganization. If there had been, or if this call for the reorganization had met its fulfillment before 1844, then Daniel's prophecy would have made mention of it. As the prophecy is silent and there has no prophets of the Elohim arisen since the church fell into the papal power about A.D. 538 to 1844, then the truth of the symbol was yet in the future. As in the prophetic period, with it ending, In 1844, the most holy place in the heavenly sanctuary was opened, unto which Yahshua entered. If this incident marked the beginning of the atonement, there would have been no better or more opportune time for a call from the heaven than at the end of the great prophetic period, in the day of the atonement being of the most solemn time for the congregation of the Seventh-day Adventists, were called out by a prophet and are practically the only people who believe in the 2300 days. We are the only people who have proclaimed it since 1844 and now in the atonement or the time of the judgment. The text for this is here quoted. And I saw another angel fly in the midst of the heaven, having the everlasting gospel to preach unto them that dwell on the earth, and unto every nation and kindred and tongue and people, saying with a loud voice, Fear Elohim and give glory unto him, for the hour of his judgment is come. And worship him that made heaven and earth and the sea and the fountains of the waters. Revelation 14:6-7. For the Seventh-day Adventists only can fulfill the type. For just at this time they were called by a prophet of Elohim to organize as a denomination and to proclaim the glad news for this gospel in all the world in this generation. Thus the symbol 70 met its fulfillment at that time. Still another thought on the experience of the Israel. When the Joseph's brethren came into Egypt, they went directly to him for the coin, and Joseph's brethren came and bowed down themselves before him with their faces to the earth. Genesis 42:6. For the sons of Jacob were strangers in the land and knew not their brother who was a governor. They providentially came not to Pharaoh as the Egyptians did for the coin, but directly to the right person, Joseph. In contrast to this, the Egyptians, who should have known better, being acquainted with the rule of their country, went unto Pharaoh for the corn. But their king told them to go to Joseph. What he saith unto you, do. For the Egyptians must have known Joseph, being their governor, for more than 8 years by that time. In the 7 years of plenty, it was Joseph unto whom they sold the food, and he preserved which he preserved for the time of the famine. Joseph rode in Pharaoh's chariot over all the land of Egypt, and all the Egyptians bowed down unto him. Thus it would have been impossible for them to be ignorant of him. This being a symbol, it can only find its fulfillment in the following narrative. For the Egyptians, Gentiles, parentheses, went to Pharaoh, parentheses, leadership of the apostolic church, for the corn. So the apostles directed the Gentile converts to Yahshua, as the Pharaoh directed the Egyptians to Joseph, saying, Go to Joseph. What he saith unto you, do. If this is the meaning we get from the Egyptians going to Pharaoh, then the significance of the sons of Jacob going directly to Joseph means that when that church is reorganized, the people would have to go directly to Yahshua, parentheses Joseph. The lesson intended is that in the beginning of the church in 1845, which had no true leadership, Pharaoh, to go to, they of the necessity went directly to Yahshua, as the sons of Jacob came to Joseph. Jacob. Type of James. For the Seventh-day Adventist Church, which came into the existence in 1845, became Israel, the movement from which the true Israel, the 144,000, are made. It will be noticed that the names of the fathers after flesh and by the promise coincide. The father's name of Israel after flesh was Jacob. So is the name of the father of Israel by the promise, Seventh-day Adventist movement. But one may say, it was Jacob in the former and James White in the latter. True, it is. But the names of Jacob and James are the same. Again, the very first vision Sister White had was about the 144,000. And the aim of this denomination has been to make that number. the land of Goshen. And the beginning of this denomination was typified by the Israel entrance into the Egypt as previously explained. We shall now consider the truth of the land of the Goshen, for the Joseph brought Israel into the Egypt and gave them the part of the land to dwell in, which was the best land in the country of Egypt. So here we have the United States is represented as a spiritual Egypt location today. Okay, and so Texas is the land of Goshen here in this spiritual land of Egypt. And there Joseph nursed them, their flocks, herds, and cattle, and all they had. See Genesis 45:10. For the land of Goshen stands as a symbol of the United States of America, in which the church came into the existence. While our country is productive like the land of the Goshen, the richest in the world, and a prosperous nation, it is the best for the missionary work, for it is made up of all nations, and therefore, like the land of Goshen, the most productive in Egypt, the world. Joseph nursed Israel. In the beginning of the 7 years of the famine, the Egyptians sold all and became servants unto Pharaoh, which has reference unto the Apostles' Church and of the Gentiles then, who sold their houses and land and had all things common, as previously explained. But Israel did not sell any of their possession, nor did they pay for the food with which Joseph nourished them. Israel then represents the church now in the beginning of the church in 1845. Yahshua, parentheses Joseph, opened the storehouse and gave us all the truth corn we could possibly assimilate. Is it not a fact that no other people at any time in the history of the church have received as much truth as Elohim has given us in our time? Line upon line, precept upon precept, instruction upon instruction have been given us so that we as a people may know and understand the ways of the Yahweh, obey His voice, keep His charge and commandments, statutes and laws, thus becoming the children of Abraham and heirs according unto the promise. When this is realized in the hearts of men, then they will fulfill the charge given unto Peter. Peter said, Thou knowest I love thee. Yahshua saith unto him, Feed my sheep. Okay. This brings the close of our study. This audience contacts us at the 11th hour. Call us number 11. Click on our audio archive. We're going to close this service now with us. Take the name of Yahshua with you. Take the name of Yahshua with you, child of sorrow and of woe. It will joy and comfort give you. Take it then where you go, precious name, oh how sweet, hope of earth and joy of heaven, precious name, oh how sweet, hope of earth and joy of heaven. Take the name of Yahshua forever, as a shield from every snare. If temptations round you gather, breathe the holy name in prayer. Precious name, oh how sweet, hope of earth and joy of heaven. Precious name, oh how sweet, hope of earth and joy of heaven. Oh, the precious name of Yahshua, how it thrills our souls with joy, when His loving arms receive us, and His songs our tongues employ. Precious name, oh how sweet, hope of earth and joy of heaven. precious name, oh how sweet, hope of earth and joy of heaven, at the name of Yahshua bowing, falling prostrate at his feet, King of kings in heaven will crown him, when our journey is complete. Precious name, oh how sweet, hope of earth and joy of heaven. Precious name, oh how sweet, hope of earth and joy of heaven.